happy 4th of July week to everybody. Public service announcement. I don't want to see anybody's 4th of July festivities end up as a Facebook or TikTok reel of them blowing off their hand because, oh, it didn't light. So please be responsible with your fireworks and any festivities that you might be enjoying this week. So I love doing these calls and having these conversations because it gives me an opportunity as well as it gives all of you the opportunity to see yet another example of what happens when you execute with intention and focus within your practice. While I love coaching and I love the interaction that I have with each and every one of you and the opportunity to peel back that layer on my practice, I'm just one of one. And what we love about Limitless and what I love about Limitless, what attracted me to the program from its inception in 2018 was the ability to not only hear best practices, but also to see what happens when you execute on that. And that has gone through iterations over the years with different advisors coming and going from the program and coming back to share. And that is what we are here to talk about here today. So like I said, I love these calls because I talk much, and the majority of my time talking is going to be done right now, and then I'm going to turn it over to Brian. Just some additional housekeeping tasks. Brian already kind of suggested this in the chat. If you do have questions, the only tweak that I would put to Brian's message here is to use the Q&A function in Zoom so that questions don't get buried. As Brian mentioned, we do want this to be an interaction and a dialogue more than just a monologue. So if you do have questions, we will likely not type the answer. We will just answer those live. And Brian, if you want, what I can do is I'll keep an eye on the Q&A as you're going through. If there's a question that's applicable to the part that you're at in the presentation, I'll just kind of give you a quick interruption. We can unmute whoever asked a question and kind of address it from there. How's that sound?
That sounds great. Yeah. I've got multiple screens open. So if the audience, perfect. If you guys see me looking around, I promise I'm not checking my email. I'm either checking my notes or checking to make sure I haven't missed a question for you guys.
Awesome. Awesome. Sounds good. So I will drive and try, or excuse me, I will pass it over to you and let you drive. I will do my best to preemptively anticipate when will be a next slide. But if I'm missing a slide, just let me know, advance the next slide, and we'll go from there. So Brian, go ahead, take it away, my friend. Thanks for being
here. Sounds great. Thank you very much, Adam. I really appreciate it. And you know, just to repeat the thing about the questions, I would prefer this be more of a conversation than a presentation. So ask away. And if you're thinking it, somebody else is probably thinking the same thing. They probably have the same question. So ask them whenever you can. A quick background on me and my story. A big part of the reason why I'm here today is to talk about how I work with my staff. And they're so important because of the size of my practice relative to the size of my team. I started with three full-time advisors, including myself. So it was me, two advisors, and three part-time staff. Back in 2021, two of those advisors retired, and actually one of the part-time staff retired at that time. So it was left with me as the sole advisor in the practice, two part-time staff that I've brought up to three part-time staff now. I think a little bit about what makes me unique compared to what you hear with some of the studies that are out there is capacity. I work with 275 clients on a consistent ongoing basis. So not files, not people that I barely see. I see about 150 of those clients twice per year and 125 of those clients at least once per year, plus all the other ancillary meetings in between. I know Kitsis has had reports out there that says advisor capacity is between 100 and 150 clients. I don't know what I would do with all my spare time if I only worked with that many. But a big part of the reason I was able to do this was twofold. One, I clarified my niche. So I was really clear on who I wanted to work with. That is people within 5 years of retirement or already retired. I clarified what I do for them, which is to help them simplify their money, to help them build an income plan that they can't outlive, and to help them minimize their taxes. But I'll tell you, the other thing that I really did to be able to serve this number of clients is I worked closely with my team and my staff to make sure we each had our own responsibilities. We delegated everything that we could. Not only did we maintain all those clients after the two advisors retired, we've actually grown our business. So we lost less than 10 households when those two advisors retired. We've actually grown our total client base over the last 3 years and added over $75 million in assets under management. And it was only possible to do that because of the support staff that we added. So Adam, next slide would be good. My team got three part-time people on my team. Michelle does all of the scheduling, adding meetings to and activities to Redtail, overseeing RMDs, QCDs. She is often the first person on the phone. Michelle and I have had a lot of conversations over the years about how to handle client questions, client conversations, how to prevent things from ever even getting on my calendar. She is an outstanding gatekeeper, and she's really made a huge difference in the practice. Stephanie is what I would put in the category of high-level client support problem solver. She captures all these assigned tasks. Really, the bottom thing is the most important bullet point with Stephanie, which is if I need help, I go to Stephanie. She is my rock star right hand. She keeps the world moving on a daily basis, no doubt about it. And then very quietly in the background is John Carradinas. And John, he makes sure that Nitrogen and AssetMap and our income dashboards are up to date. He does a lot of trading and rebalancing, a lot of tracking client cash needs to make sure I don't miss those things. But that's my amazing staff. I know some of you may have no staff, and this slide's perfect, so stay there. You may have no staff. I cannot stress what Stephanie says enough about rent and ramen. The minute you can cover rent and ramen, you have to go out and get another staff member. You have to add to your team. There are tasks you need to delegate. You can't do this alone. You can't grow your practice alone. Those three people make it happen, but I would hire one as soon as humanly possible. Another big part of what we do, I kind of want this to be, as again, like opening the kimono. I want to show you guys everything I do. I will screen share later on if you need to and show you what I do. Technology is a big part of the way we're able to serve all those clients. Here's the list of all the technology that we use. Redtail, AssetMap, Nitrogen. I'm not going to read the whole list off, but we've been very intentional. We've been thoughtful about every tool that we add. It's got to help simplify our clients' money. It's got to help create an income plan that they can't outlive, and it's got to help them minimize taxes over their lifetime. It's also got to help me get through a minimum of 325 to 375 client meetings per year, minimum, because again, two client meetings with the people with 150 clients, one client meeting with 125, minimum in the 375 to 400 range if people don't schedule. So we've got to be, you know, really efficient with the way we handle things. So there's all the technology and tools that we use. We'll go to the next slide. So a big part of what we do with our client meetings, we absolutely use Surge. This is just a funny aside story. When we first started doing Surge, it was stressful in our office. My staff had never done Surge before. The previous advisors, no offense to them, but didn't even always meet with the clients on an annual basis. And I was going to up the ante to go from seeing them sporadically, maybe once a year, to at least half the clients twice a year and every other client at least once per year. It was a huge increase in the number of meetings. We started by using Surge. And in the beginning, clients or my staff was so stressed out about the process, again, being very honest, we stopped calling it Surge because it just gave them the heebie-jeebies. They got very anxious about it. So now we just call it review season. We've got spring review season, summer review season, and fall review season. It's still Surge by another name, but we don't call it that because they got worried about it. It was stressful in the beginning. Again, I won't lie. But here's how we get it all done. I meet with my clients in two groups. The clients have two meetings per year, one in the spring, one in the fall. We've got our whole intentionality around why that time of year. Some clients have been with us so long or their situation is so simple, they just want to meet once per year. So we often will do that just in the summertime. My schedule is a little lighter in the summer. And our scheduling process is really simple. It's three steps. Michelle from my office uses Schedule Once to send out an email to our clients. And what we were really focused on was trying to do this in thirds. We thought it'd be a win if a third of the clients scheduled the meeting themselves on Schedule Once, if a third of the clients took the time to call our office to schedule the meeting, so we didn't have to make an outbound call, and if that left only about a third of our clients where we had to proactively reach out to them beyond the email, in other words, call them to schedule this. Now, again, rewinding the tape to how this started. When we first started, I was trying to schedule almost 400 meetings per year, and Michelle was calling each client individually. Now, you can all shake your heads about what a terrible idea that was and how we should have been smarter than that, but that's where we got started with this process, was basically 400 outbound phone calls per year. And we got smart, used tools, created efficiencies, and we moved to the process of schedule once. And again, I'm not married to schedule once. Use schedule once, use any sort of online scheduling tool that you want. Just embrace it and get done with it. But Michelle sends out the emails. We've found it to be a little bit better than those one-third. About a third of our clients just immediately schedule those meetings themselves. A little more than a third call in because they either want the meeting in person, which we don't allow that scheduling online because I work across three offices. And less than a third do we actually have to reach out to and place a phone call. But that was huge. And then we've got our check-ins. If after a couple of weeks of sending that email, Michelle doesn't hear from them, then she makes an outbound phone call. If we still don't hear from them, she does a third email. And then frankly, we just drop them into Redtail with a note that they declined the meeting and I have a follow-up process. But that's how we really make sure that we get those meetings on the books efficiently every year. So Adam, we'll go to the next slide. Meeting prep is really important. So the way I run my week, Mondays are for prep, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays are client meetings, Friday is for cleanup. We've gotten to the point, again, through learning, where client meetings are only offered at specific times. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday are client meetings, and they are 9:30, 11, 1, 2:30, and 4. We will make exceptions if a client absolutely needs it, but I'll be honest with you, they're rare that we have to make exceptions either to the dates or the times. It's really important though, because what allows my staff to do is to help me prepare efficiently. So the minute a meeting is booked for a week, they put 30 minutes worth of prep on my Monday calendar. So I know exactly what clients I need to prepare for. So I don't like to-do lists. I like things on my calendar. And so if I've got a meeting scheduled for Tuesday at 9:30, there's 30 minutes of prep on my Monday calendar. Now, if you're doing quick math in your head, if I'm doing 15 meetings per week and I need at least 30 minutes of prep for each meeting, I basically need to sit at my desk on Monday and prep for between 7 and 8 hours. Now I can get more efficient. Some of them it takes less, some of them it takes more, but Mondays are a long day for me to prepare for those meetings. So what we got here, things that happen. As soon as the meetings get scheduled, Michelle mails out an agenda to the clients with any supporting documentation. She puts 30 minutes worth of prep on my calendar, although it really, I've gotten efficient to the point where it takes me 20 to 25 minutes to prepare. We put an activity on Redtail. We've got a template that we use. So it's just the meeting is in there, but it's also my template of all the things that I want to look at and prepare. And that template is later on in these slides. So I'll show you that so you can get a chance to see it. We also include the other staff members on those activities. So John knows that he needs to go out and make sure that Nitrogen and Asset Map and income dashboards are all up to date and ready for it. And then Stephanie from my office, she makes sure that the most recent performance reports from Redtail are in there. Actually from Portfolio Center are in Redtail. Honestly, we wouldn't need three people to do this if we just didn't have so many clients. We could probably do this with less staff, but with the number of clients that we're trying to serve, that's why we need it that way. A big part of it, though, is being really disciplined and intentional with the process. It is the same process to prepare for every client meeting every time, and we're running the same schedule every time. So Michelle isn't on the phone asking people, what's the best time for you that works? Nope, it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Here's the time slots that are still available this week. Which one would you like? I thought that was going to be a big deal to clients, not having the flexibility. The exact opposite happened. Clients preferred it. Meetings got scheduled faster, and it was easier for them to pick the time slot than leaving it open-ended. So I was honestly nervous about that. Shouldn't have been. One of the best changes we made was picking those 5 time slots. If it feels like I'm going a little fast, that's intentional. I want to leave as much time for Q&A at the end as possible, screen sharing, et cetera. But I'm still watching. So if any questions come through, Adam, make sure don't hesitate to interrupt me so we can do that. So question, what do you mean you mail an agenda? Every meeting that we prepare for, we'll pick a theme for the spring, for the summer, for the fall. We actually physically mail the agenda to the clients. Our agendas are very similar. The first 3 to 5 items are almost always the same. And then it's the last 1 to 2 items that are changing value adds that we switch up each time we're doing review season. We also send them a copy of their asset map report with a little post-it note on it that says, please be prepared to update any of these values that we don't have on staff or on hand. But we literally put it in an envelope and send it out. And the reason why is that people's inboxes get flooded. But when they physically get that envelope from us, almost all of our clients have that in front of them with the agenda, with any supporting documents we need, whether it's a beneficiary review or an income information sharing agreement, and any supporting documents that we provided to prep for that meeting. I love efficiency. I love being digital whenever I can. We've had far more success mailing the agenda out to the clients and the supporting documents than we have sending it to them digitally, where oftentimes they come in unprepared. So Christy, if you've got more questions on that, throw them in there and I'll be happy to come back and expand on it. If not, Adam, we'll go to the next slide. So let's see, this is about my meeting day process. So meeting days are full, as you can imagine. 5 meetings in a day. And what's really important is that, again, we created a recurring process for this. Now, some of you may be able to do 6, 7, 8 meetings in a day. God bless you if you can, with trying to get 2 kids to and from school, which I typically take my kids to school every day. I don't always get a chance to pick them up because they're busy. Trying to fit in 5 meetings, get all the staff work done, get all the client work done, we don't have a choice but to be efficient. So what we do on the day of the meeting is we print out my Red Tail prep notes. So everything I prepared on Monday, I have printed on 1 sheet of paper, and I write all of my notes from the meeting on that same sheet of paper. So I'm literally working off of 1 page. As soon as the meeting ends, and I learned this the hard way by letting these things carry over to Friday one time, and I stopped that. As soon as the meeting ends, I write my client notes. Huge difference in productivity, in efficiency. I do not end a review meeting day until all of my meeting notes have been written. That's a cardinal rule. If I got to stay until 6 o'clock that night to get it done, I do it. I never let the notes carry over. It's just too hard to remember everything when you're doing that.
And when Brian, I say real quick, just to clarify, you're talking writing, you type them. You don't use it. You don't use a dictation service or a voice to text. I think I saw in your text stack, you do use a voice to text, correct?
So I do. I have
a
couple
of things. And on that note, real quick, clarifying, I apologize if I missed it. Oh. What percentage of your meetings, as I'm thinking through your day of and post-meeting process, what percentage of your meetings are in person with clients versus virtual?
Great. So great questions. I'll do that second one first. I'd say it's about 50-50 in person versus virtual. My clients are all over the country, so many of them, it's just not practical for them to be here. When we book a day of in-person meetings, I have 3 offices that I work out of. Again, I took over for retiring advisors. We'll book 1 full day in the office of client meetings. So whether it's Norwich or Johnson City, et cetera, we'll do them all in person that day. Once in a while, if we have to fit something in, we'll put a virtual one in the middle of the day. In terms of my meeting notes, the way I do it in terms of efficiency, first, I actually do my meeting notes in the form of an email to the clients. So I used to do separate notes and separate email to the clients. Over time, what I did is I streamlined it down to just writing everything to the clients in an email, and I BCC my staff on that message, and they know to go through it and to pull their tasks out. I use a combination of TextBlaze, which is a text expander, to give me a certain template that I get started with. And then I use, I think it's called voice-in-voice dictation and typing. Now, I'm a fast typer, so a lot of times what I'll do is I'll start the email in Outlook. I'll use a text expander to create the framework of the email so I don't miss anything important. I will turn on the dictation tool, but I'll actually start typing first. And then if I get into something where I really need to explain something and it's longer, then I'll dictate. And the dictation tool will just sit there in the background being available. And so I'm really using a combination of text expander, typing, and dictation.
Okay.
There was one sidebar question. It sounds like you could have full-time staff, but why the decision to have part-time staff? Because that's what they want. Michelle only wants to work 30 hours a week and she takes off most Fridays. Stephanie is young and has 2 kids. And so she just wants to have part-time. She doesn't want to work full-time. And, John, I don't have enough trading and other stuff that I do where he needs to be full-time. So he's happy. I probably could have just 1 or 2 full-time staff, but they all want to be part-time and it works out to everyone's benefit. So great question, Adam. And actually, I just looking over at my other notes on my screen here. Yes, I was going to mention I use templates for the framework. I do use dictation, absolutely. A big part of this, though, was learning to write the notes in a way where I could write the notes once to the clients, and then my staff could read the notes and know what needed to be done from the meetings. And again, there's samples of these that I'll show. How do I take notes in meetings? I just write them down. I have handwritten notes. That's all I do. When I do use Zoom, I absolutely look down and I absolutely tell clients, is it okay if I take notes during the meeting? If you see me looking down, I'm taking notes. That's just how I've handled it with no issues. I know that Zoom's got the ability to do an AI summary. I use it to supplement my notes. I've never used it to replace it. I know Fathom and Otter and other things can do the same thing. You do enough of the same meetings with clients, you start to be able to write in shorthand all the things you need to capture. I've never had a problem writing thorough notes to clients with my handwritten notes. That's just not an issue. You start doing 15 meetings a week, 400 meetings a year, you'll get efficient at writing notes.
Yeah. Just some quick commentary on my end as well. What could, because our meeting or our clients are 100% virtual now. Shut down the office in October of last year. So our team and our client relationships are now 100% virtual. And if I could take a picture right now and screenshot it, I'd show you the setup that I have, right? I'm always talking to the client on the MacBook Pro right here. So I'm looking at them. I have Evernote, which I'll use as what Brian sounds as he's using as a scratch pad, or maybe I'd use my Remarkable, but I use Evernote just to jot down two or three keywords, right? Sentence fragments, ideas, so that when I come back to it day of, like you said, it's fresh of mind. I know exactly what I was talking about and I can provide the context and the details. I do dictation. Our mobile assistant templates that we use for dictation follows the exact framework of our agenda. We are now transitioning mobile assistant and experimenting. I shouldn't say transitioning, to be fair, right now. We are experimenting with Zox, which now has integrations with Redtail and with Wealthbox, to use that AI to replace the dictation and completely remove my need from having to even jot down shorthand. So too early to tell. We're in kind of an advisory relationship with Zox right now and helping them kind of create structure around that technology. But I get excited about what it could do, but I don't care whether you're, I guess the lesson here, whether you're doing it what way Brian's doing it, by shorthand, dictating, Zoom summary, writing notes, and like figure out the way in which you get just the pieces of information that you need into the CRM so that both your clients and your team know what needs to be done next and when. Mm-hmm. I would try and avoid, and this is what we've tried to do as well, of creating a freaking book narrative summary after every meeting. Like, as an advisor, I don't need a 1,000 word summary of what happened in that client meeting. A handful of bullet points, high level ideas of what we discussed, action items of who's doing what, and then we're done. Would you agree, Brian?
And I'll share with the group at the end, I'll make a note. I'll share actual meeting notes. There's a sample in here, but I'm more than happy to pull up Redtail, pull up a couple of examples. I'll tell you exactly how my meeting notes are formulated.
That'd be great.
At the very beginning, and again, I'll show them. At the very beginning, there's always, I use TextBlaze. It creates a template that I'll follow through on. Basically, the meeting notes, the subject line of the email is the client's full name, meeting notes, and the date. The very first sentence is always some sort of a personal comment from the actual meeting that we had that is personalized and real. So if they, what's an example? If they just went on a trip and we talked about the trip, that'll be in the beginning line. If their dog was just sick and you know their dog's feeling better, it's always real and personalized so they know that this is not just some cookie cutter answer. Then the next section is items that we need the client's help with in bullet point form. Please provide us with a copy of your 2023 taxes. Anything like that, written simply. The second section is items my office will address. And here's the dirty little secret about what we do in the background. It will say things like, Stephanie will send you an information sharing agreement electronically to review and sign. Remember, my staff is copied on that message. So Stephanie reads the notes. She knows exactly what she needs to do. It's not buried in the prose of the meeting summary. John from my office will rebalance your traditional IRA if needed. I've learned to write the notes in a way where it's specific to the client. It just looks like we're saying what our office is going to do. But to my staff, it is the exact instructions on who needs to do what when. And then below the, so there, again, there's the introduction, what we need the client's help with, what we need the staff to do, or my office will do. And then there's the detailed meeting notes. And those can be long depending on how complicated the meeting was. But even there, I've got a lot of summary information that I use where we always talk about their income dashboard. We always talk about their the nitrogen reports. We always talk about any major expenses they have in the next 12 months. And if we're using a value add at the end of the meeting, whether it's a beneficiary review, whether it is like right now we're doing information sharing agreements, so we have the ability to share information with third parties. We're just discussing that with every client. I will write a TextBlaze text expander for the final section of the meeting notes. So all I have to do is expand that text in the meeting notes and fill in any missing pieces. If I've got to write the same thing 150 times, I'm going to write it once and then just fill in the missing pieces in the meeting notes. I can, on average, write my meeting notes between typing and dictation in 15 to 20 minutes. I leave a half hour window at the end of every meeting in case it runs over. And so I frankly have time to get ready for the next meeting. But I take 15 to 20 minutes of that to write the meeting notes. And it is rare that I don't have the meeting notes done in that period of time, even the long written ones. Couple of questions. I want to come back to Travis's question at the end, which is, it shows that you don't use Monte Carlo. I'll be more than happy to show the exact tools, but I want to come back to that one. So I don't want to lose that. Yep. Seems difficult to have that one open. In two meetings with clients, there's always ancillary items that come up, planning a surge. Clark, I honestly don't know how to say this. I've never had that problem. If it's something where we have a lot of moving pieces, then we will schedule a follow-up meeting, right? So I've got a client, we're moving over $7 million. There's a trust involved. It's super complicated. Great. We need a follow-up meeting just to talk about asset transfer. No problem. But I run two meetings per year. They rarely run over 1 hour. They often are less than that. I've never had a client complain, and most of them have said they can't believe how much we get done in one meeting. And most of them love the fact that we simplify things. So again, go back to the three things we do for our clients. Simplify their money, number one, help them create an income plan they can outlive, and help them minimize their taxes. Because we tell them right up front, we simplify their money. We don't go into a huge amount of detail on anything unless clients ask for it. I will always say, hey, we're going to start at the high level overview. If you want us to drill down, let us know. I am embarrassed how little time we spend on investments with our clients. And I am no longer surprised how little they care about that. So I've never had an issue, even with my most complex clients, in two meetings per year, if there is a big planning issue that needs to be addressed. Major updates to estate planning documents, transfers of trusts. Sure, we'll schedule a couple more meetings to make sure that gets done correctly, but that's pretty rare. I hope I answered that correctly. If you've got a follow-up question, don't hesitate to ask a follow-up question. Anything more on the meeting notes, client value? I think we're good with that.
No other questions or comments at this time. So I mean, Kevin's dropped a sample template in his or in chat for those of you that maybe haven't been following chat. Kevin Murray, appreciate you sharing, Kevin. He dropped a template for his post review template. And then he said he uses this in TextExpander to generate an email. I assume, I'm not familiar with TextBlaze. I'm assuming TextBlaze and TextExpander are kind of the same thing.
Just okay. A different okay. version. It's what I could get approved by my organization in cybersecurity.
Fair enough.
Just think how great it'll be when those companies merge. That's Blazing TextExpander. I mean,
there we go. It'll be even better. Just giant fireball will be their logo. Are the majority of my families in a similar age financials? Yes. I work almost exclusively with people within 5 years of retirement or already retired. Again, back to the beginning, the niche. Once I picked the niche, then efficiency followed behind it because we can deliver the same thing to everyone.
And to Clark, there's not a month that goes by that I won't just kind of shake my head. It's like, damn, I wish we just worked with retirees. Because they're so much easier to work with than our business owner clients. Because
100%.
We joke that, all right, client, this is our service model. This is when we're going to interact. We know that life happens outside of our proactive outreach. So the best way to get in contact with our office is to send an email to our dedicated client. So like, it's not if, but how many times something comes up in between our service model. That's why John, like our advisory firm, we're learning that each advisor can probably only work with about 90 households instead of 150 retirees, because retirees are freaking, they're a cakewalk to try and service, 100%. To build a service model around. So yeah. Sometimes, yeah, I have that question. It's like, shit, this business, sorry, I'm sworn a recorded line here. this business would be so much easier if all I did was work with retirees. I could probably get away with working 40 days a year. I mean, I'm not being excessive in that, because I've had that thought of, you know what? Let me just grab the 30 retirees that I work with that are still my clients, sell off everything else, have a part-time personal assistant, and I could have a part-time job. We've all probably had that same thought. Right, Chris? Right, Ryan, even you.
Yeah. And to Christy's point, like, do what you love. I love working with retirees. So I'm very fortunate that the thing I enjoy doing the most with the people I enjoy doing the most just happens to be people that can easily meet Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays between 9:30 and 5 o'clock. Because I joke with, like, my clients all the time, they're like, no big deal, Brian, we're retired. We can come into the office whenever. Like, it's, they don't need Friday at 6 p.m. because they're working so hard. They're more than, as long as I don't interrupt, you know, hanging out with friends or their golf outing or their travel, they're good. So it's a big part of it. I'm sure you'll get to it, but wonder what your clients pay you for this. Our fees are really simple. 1% on the first $1 million of assets under management, and then a discounted fee schedule from there. Probably could charge more. Don't. Wanted to keep things simple. It's just really easy. Is the post-review notes template you shared for you and your team, do you send any of that to the client? All of it. So what I send to the client is the meeting notes. That is also what my staff sees. And I will share real world examples of that at the end of this meeting so you can see exactly what they look like. But I used to do separate notes. I used to do basically notes to my staff of the tasks that need to be done, and then notes to the clients from the client meeting. And again, necessity is the mother of invention. I couldn't keep up with the pace doing two sets of notes. So I started to ask myself, how can I do this in one shot? And I started writing meeting notes in a way that to the clients appear to be meeting notes, but to my staff, they know exactly where to pull their tasks out of it. So it's one document, one, and it's just an email. I used to do this beautiful document that had some charts in it and some numbers in it. And I'd send it as a PDF, and it was awesome and beautiful. And it took me like 20 to 30 minutes to create for every client. Pain in the ass. Clients never brought it into meetings. So I know there's like that heuristic out there that people talk about. If you want to know how important something is to a client, see if they bring it into a meeting without you asking them to. I cannot get over how many clients print out our email notes and bring them in. They have gotten simplified and uglier from how I originally used them, and clients reference them more than ever after switching over to just a pure email that I send them. Are your clients bringing top of mind items to the meeting, or are you 95? The very first thing on our agenda every single time is what's on your mind. And I open every meeting the same way after the pleasantries, which is, Mr. and Mrs. Client, as always, we sent you an agenda in advance of today's meeting to make sure we didn't miss anything that's important. But we always want to start with the most important thing first. What's on your mind that you want to make sure we cover in today's meeting? And I will, if we spend 55 minutes talking about what the clients want to talk about and 5 minutes on my agenda, it has been a successful meeting. But the very first agenda item on every agenda is what's on your mind. And I open the meeting literally with the same script every time, which is the most important thing is what you're thinking about. What's on your mind that you want to make sure we cover today? What's the top line revenue on these families? Last year, we did a little over 1.2 million total revenue. Does each family get the same deliverable? Yes, regardless of size. We now have a client minimum of $600,000 for new clients going forward. So a minimum fee of $6,000 per year. But regardless of how much you've got, and I'll share the agenda. Regardless of how much you have with us, you get the same experience. We're going to do the same planning, same work for every person. I know that sounds counterintuitive. I have found it to be more efficient to deliver the same thing to every client than to try to create different levels of service, because we spend half our time trying to figure out who gets what rather than just getting unbelievably efficient at giving them all the same thing. It's counterintuitive, but it works for us.
I would just add on that real quick, Brian. Usually what I, in the coaching that I've done with advisors and the one-on-one conversations that we have, usually an advisor trying to create multiple levels of client service within their book is simply a hiding exercise. And what they should be doing is just letting go of those clients or raising mm-hmm. them up to a fee level that is commensurate mm-hmm. with the value that they're delivering. Mm-hmm. Guilty as charged, by the way. Been there, done that, got the t-shirt.
Me too. I don't have the t-shirt yet because we're in the process, but me too.
If you find yourself having... we have two service models, and the only reason that we have two is you're either a practice owner or you're not. If you're a practice owner, you get a higher level of service just because, well, there are things that you're doing as a practice owner, as an optometric practice owner. If you're not, you're everybody else and you get the same level of service. There's not the everybody else and platinum, gold, silver, bronze. I mean, if you're an advisory firm that has more than, I would say, two service models, I would ask you to ask yourself, really be honest. Is the reason that you have multiple different service levels because you're trying to mask the symptom rather than curing the disease?
Mm-hmm. And the way we've handled that going forward, we have two service levels now. We have, I deliver everything to you, or for some of our older legacy clients that are well below our minimums for me to work with going forward, I am slowly going to transition them to John on my team over time. Now, I think he has less than 10 relationships so far. So this is not a big step in that direction. But effectively, what I'm doing now in my practice is averaging up. Every time I bring on a $6,000 or more relationship, I hand over to John one, two, three, four, five smaller relationships that might total up to the same $6,000 in revenue. And for me, that's a huge win because if I can go from four clients to one client and maintain the same, as a team, we're growing our revenue because we have all the existing clients. But in terms of the people I serve, my goal now is only to average up, to try to see if I can get one client in the door to replace four or five, six smaller clients that John can handle just out of capacity, just to make sure we've got the time. I'll go quick on this slide so we can start to keep going with the questions. But Friday workflow and staff meetings. So Fridays are my cleanup day. When clients ask if they can schedule a meeting on Friday, Michelle from my office actually says what it says here, which is Ryan doesn't take meetings on Fridays so he can honor all of the commitments and promises he's made throughout the week. He needs that day to follow through on everything he said he was going to do. Clients never, other than a client that literally could only meet on a Friday because they were traveling, clients have never questioned that. And it's the truth. It's what we do. My Fridays are really simple. I wake up in the morning. I sit down. I get prepared from 8:30 to 9:30. We have a staff meeting scheduled from 9:30 to 10:30 where we review the week that was. Generally speaking, that meeting only takes about 30 minutes. And it is literally as simple as, Stephanie, tell me what you need help with today to move forward. And then when she's done answering that question, we say, great. From the group, what do you need Stephanie's help with? And we rinse and repeat those two questions with everyone. Michelle, what do you need help getting done today? From the group, what do you need Michelle to do for you? And then John, what do you need help with? And then I talk through my stuff. And that's it. That is our Friday meetings. They last about 30 minutes. Sometimes they last an hour if we talk about more important stuff. But then it leaves us the rest of the day to get the work done. And I end every Friday staff meeting the same way, which is, I hope you guys have a great day. Get your work done as fast as possible. Get out the door as soon as you can. Go enjoy your weekend. Every Friday, it's the same thing. So we'll jump to the next slide. And again, fire away with questions along the way. You might not be able to see it well. This is an actual set of meeting notes from a client meeting. And you can see the structure here where there is the introduction at the beginning. There's what we need the client's help with. There's what my staff will do. And then there's the additional meeting notes. And if this isn't easy for everyone to see later in the Q&A, I will go into Redtail. I'll pull up an actual copy of meeting notes and share it with the group. But that's the email that my clients receive. It is not pretty. It doesn't have colors. It doesn't have charts and graphs. It is nothing special. The more basic and simplified I have made this, the more clients have referenced it and used it. But that's an actual set of meeting notes for a client. It's not, I'm sure that somebody out there is cringing thinking that's what it looks like. But on the left here in the computer screen, this is what our email invitation looks like when we send out the Schedule Once link. And on the right is an example of, and it says 50 basis points. So I got to figure out who that one was. On the right is an example of what the template will be in Redtail of the things I'm going to look for when preparing for a meeting. It's not exhaustive, but that's an example of what shows up in there to make sure I go through every single thing. Are there any activities? What's their asset map look like? Go through nitrogen, go through performance reports, look for tax loss harvesting and capital gains and losses. Income dashboard. Remember, I work with retirees, RMDs, QCDs, make sure holistic plan's up to date, read all the past notes, add any additional notes. This is this quarter, so we're doing information sharing agreements with all of our clients. Make sure their tax letter's up to date for this year. And then there's a couple more things, but make sure they're in iRebail because that's newly available to us through Schwab. So we're getting all of our models into iRebail. And that's how I prep for every single meeting, is going through that checklist and then some. And it makes sure I'm always prepared and on time for those meetings. And again, I'll show real world ones if we want to see them. For those of you that either don't have staff or you're in the process of making changes with staff, I really, really want to clarify a couple of things. First, this was a process. We did not wake up one day and we were a well-oiled machine. Our first surge was painful. My staff, their hair was on fire. We were making hundreds of outbound phone calls. We didn't have an online scheduling tool. We didn't have an activity template in Redtail. My meeting notes were split into notes to the client versus notes to my staff. It was hard. And I would 100% do it again in a heartbeat because it forces you to iterate. And what we would do at the end, like those initial Friday staff meetings in the first surges, they did take more than a half an hour. And a big part of what I was saying was, what was harder this week than it should have been and how can we change it? What did you do that took more time than you thought it should? What is a task you don't ever want to have to do again? Right? Like we had a lot of those conversations to understand. Like that's where Michelle brought up, Ryan, it is impossible to give people an open-ended question about your calendar. Can we just offer 5 time slots a day? It seems so simple in hindsight, but I was so nervous about not giving clients that flexibility. Huge regret that I didn't start that sooner, but we iterated. We iterated with how we schedule meetings. We iterated with how I wrote meeting notes, with how the agendas looked. We used to send out asset maps and we'd like handwrite stuff on there. We just printed out, we literally bought post-it notes that say, please look this over and make sure you're prepared to update any values that look out of date. And we just stick the post-it note on every asset map and we send it out the door, tear it off and stick it on so that it's more, it's not just printed on there, that physical post-it note draws the client's attention in, but it takes my staff 2 seconds to get that out the door with the agenda. Those things were hard. So the hardest part was just convincing my staff to try it. The 2 retiring advisors, when I told them we were going to surge, they thought I was going to literally break the office, that it wasn't going to work. Remember, 3 advisors working with less clients, moving to 1 advisor working with more clients, same amount of staff. They just didn't think it was possible it was. The making adjustments every surge, though, was the big part. Iterate, iterate, iterate. Sit with your staff. Sit with yourself if you're by yourself as a solo practitioner and literally ask yourself the same questions. What did I do that took more time than it should have? What is a task I never want to do again? See if you can delegate it or eliminate it. You know, what just felt hard? Let's sit down and create a process for that. And then another thing is like, how did I build processes for my team? I would write standard operating procedures for anything that I found to be an issue. I would spend some of my time on my Fridays would be, okay, you know what? Processing this was harder than it should have been. Here's standard operating procedures. And probably even more valuable than writing those down was I used Vidyard. You can use Loom. You can use BombBomb. Don't care what it is. I would use Vidyard to record instructions for recurring tasks, save them in the standard operating procedures document that my staff could access with just a click of a button. And they could go back anytime they wanted to and watch those videos. And those were immensely helpful. Like how to prep for a client meeting, what the agenda looks like. Now that is rote memorization for my staff. They don't need them. But every once in a while, if there's something we don't do frequently and we need to do it, I will get a notification from Vidyard that somebody went and watched that video again. And I don't have to go back and explain the process. I record it once and then it's there in eternity for my staff to read and review and watch those videos and catch up on those notes. So let me back up here. Steven, what's the general personality of my average client in the weeds engineer type, super hands-off delegators? Just curious if your client base tends to prefer more details with lengthy email notes. So I kind of have them all. I've got some people where I know I can list off 5 people by name right now that are going to want everything and the minutia down to the penny. And then I've got people that literally, if I could send them a green piece of paper once a quarter when they made money and a red piece of paper once a quarter if they lost money, they'd be happy. And I've got everything in between. There's no one personality type where they're all delegators or they're all in the weeds engineer types. I serve them all. Stephen, honestly, the way I answer your question is knowing my clients' personality types, I'll just be more thorough with the meeting notes for my engineers. I'll be a little more high-level overview for my delegators, but I don't change my process. I just get into the weeds a little more with some of the details with my engineer type people. And I just keep a high level with my delegators. So I serve both, but I don't change the process. I just change the content a smidge. And we can jump to the next slide. All right, show and tell, we can do that. Let's just see. I think it's just a summary slide after that. Yep. So I'll just hit the summary slide, and then I would love to do Q&A. I would love to show you guys whatever you want to see. How we did this with our staff, though, to make it work. First of all, the God's honest truth, necessity, right? 400 plus client meetings per year. Don't have a huge team. I know it seems like it with three people. If you've only got one person, three probably seems like a lot. I promise you, with the number of clients we're serving, it doesn't feel that way. Number two, if you haven't done this exercise yet, this is one of my favorite exercises to do. I do it all the time. Stephanie's recommendation of the above the line, below the line exercise. That was how I started to figure out what I needed to delegate to my staff versus what I should keep. It was also something I would ask my staff to do so I could figure out where we needed to create automation and efficiency, because something that had to be done, not by me, was in there below the line section. And so I needed to find ways to make that work easier for them. But iterate. Like literally every time we would finish surge, we would sit down, now called review season, and just talk about what hurt, what was painful, what'd you love, what worked better. We talked about it. A big thing
Real quick. What we've done on that is, so we use Asana for our project management for on the business type thing. Redtail is for everything in the business, client related. Asana is on the business. We have an open project in Asana that has, I think we've settled surge lessons or something like that. Rule of thumb, you never change anything during surge. We call it a sprint, whatever you want to call it. You never change anything during that, but you still need a place to capture those ideas so that you can discuss them after surge. So have a place, make sure that your team has some place that they know that they can put ideas of throwing something against a proverbial wall so that you can come back after surge to discuss how do we fix it? How do we improve it? How do we delete it? Something like that.
Yep. And that's exactly what we would do. We would keep a laundry list of all the things we discussed. And then when review season was done, we would sit down and prioritize which ones we wanted to work on, what we wanted to change, what we wanted to do next, different during the next one. So benefits of the team collaboration, a big part of this, my staff started to get clarity on roles. We didn't have that in the beginning. Everybody kind of did a little bit of everything. And over time, we started to specialize. Like you might notice to the level of back on that staffing slide, Michelle is the queen of required minimum distributions and qualified charitable distributions. She is focused on making sure we get those right for my clients every year. It's one of the things she does, but she knows she owns that task. You know, John is responsible for trading and rebalancing and watching if we need to do cash raises for clients, et cetera. We gained a huge amount of efficiency once we started to really clarify every person's role. Continuous improvement, we talked about that. And then the examples of improvement. I'll be honest with you, the other thing that's not on this slide that probably should be is me learning to let go. I was bad. I was that person who would go to my staff and be like, would it be okay if maybe I asked you if possibly, if your schedule permits, if you could do this thing for me? And fortunately, I have such a phenomenal staff. They always came back the same way, which is, Brian, this is our job. Like you should not only would they say this is our job, you shouldn't be doing that. Like we should do this. Go record a video of how it needs to be done and never touch this task again, because it's not where you should be spending your time. You should be preparing for meetings with clients, holding meetings with clients, or following up on your meetings with clients, but you should not be doing XYZ task. Give that to us. And if like that's a true sign of a rock star right hand. If you've got somebody who recognizes a task that you're doing that you shouldn't be and they tell you to stop, give them a high five and recognize you've got a rock star right hand. That was one of the easiest ways for me to know that, like Stephanie is a great example of that. She's like, stop doing that, Brian. Don't do that ever again. Give it to me. Video instructions, huge. Vidyard, Loom, BombBomb, don't care what it is. Video instructions are huge. Because my clients go back, or my staff goes back to them all the time and watches the videos over and over again if there's something that they don't do all the time. All right. I want to open it up to, I think the next slide might be Q&A. I just closed out one window, but I want to open up to Q&A. I will show anybody anything they want to see. Oh, so opening the kimono, not in a dirty way. Questions here. So what have you learned about leaders hiring? Okay, I want to actually go back to Travis's first because I promised I would answer his question. It shows you don't use Monte Carlo planning tools like Right Capital, et cetera. How have clients responded to this? How long have you been doing planning like this? So how long planning? Roughly 4 years this way. We used to use eMoney/WealthVision, do cash flow based financial plans. Again, remember my niche, within 5 years of retirement or already retired, everyone in the same category. This may be sacrilege. You don't have to agree with me. In fact, you can vehemently disagree with me, and I totally respect your opinion. I have come to hate all of those cash flow based financial planning tools. I no longer use them. We like to call them things like scenario analysis or what if analysis, which is a really polite way of saying a giant pile of guesses printed out in a report that will be wrong less than 6 months after the ink dries. And if you don't believe me, let's go back to 2020 and show me the financial plan that had a bear market fully correct before December, followed by 9% inflation the next year. I got a feeling there's not a WealthVision, eMoney, Right Capital, name it plan that had that in it. We switched over to what I basically refer to as doing our planning in real time, having nimble enough tools where we can provide you an update every time we meet with real world numbers, because that's all that matters. A projection is irrelevant because you're only going to get to actually live with the money that's in your accounts in reality, not what was on your report. So again, I'll show you those tools. When we switched from doing WealthVision/eMoney, eMoney is the street version, LPL, who we worked through at the time, offered it through WealthVision, and we switched over to using just the tools we use today, no concerns. Clients actually hated the old tools, just didn't want to explain it to us. They were confusing and complicated. They love the new tools. It answers their most pressing questions in a simple to understand format. I lost zero clients when I stopped using and updating those reports, and actually gained more clients faster when I stopped using and updating those reports. And so again, 4 years, never lost a client, actually picked up speed with gaining new clients faster. Happy to show you how I do that. What do you learn about leaders hiring the right support staff? I would say the hard thing about hiring is that you don't always get an opportunity to take that person for a test drive. And you're at the mercy of trying to hire a great person. I would say the best thing you could possibly do in the hiring process is to walk them through real world scenarios and ask them how they would react to it. But there's no, I don't have a secret sauce there. You'll get good people, you'll get bad people. I think being really clear about what you need the person on your team to do and being able to articulate your expectations right from the beginning is probably the most important thing, so that there's no surprises of whether they're going to be capable of doing the job or not. How do you handle clients who reach out for one-off questions in between surges? It depends. few things. So the first, if they call my office, and this is stolen right out of the language from the guys at the Perfect RIA, I have trained my staff to try to uncover the question before it gets to me to see if my staff can handle it, right? Hey, I need to talk to Brian. Great, no problem. So let me back up. I don't ever take a client phone call live during the day. All client phone calls go to my staff. All return phone calls are scheduled, even if they're scheduled for the same day. Never is a person transferred directly to me from my staff, so that I can always be prepared to answer their question. Hey, thank you for the call. You know, in order, and this is literally the language they use, in order for Brian to be prepared when he talks to you, can you help me understand what you need today? And if they say like, oh, I want to update my beneficiaries. No problem, Leland. Was there a question? No question. Okay.
Sorry. Just technical difficulties.
No worries. It's okay. I just want to make sure if I could clarify a question I did. So if my staff can handle the request, they immediately take, oh, I can do that for you. No need to bother Brian. If they can't, hey, great. Brian's available, whatever, today at 3:30 to give you a call back. Does that work for you? But we schedule those return phone calls. If it's an email that comes in, generally speaking, during my review season, I will have an out of office alert that says, I'm currently in our busy review season. I'm prioritizing time with my clients. This is paraphrasing. I can get you the actual language. It will be several days before I will be able to respond to this email, but don't worry. I've got amazing staff. If you need anything immediately, please call our office. If it's a 911 emergency, they will get a hold of me today. Something to that effect is always my out-of-office alert whenever I'm in review meetings. That's what Mondays and Fridays are for if I don't have time during the week to respond to those one-off questions. If not, it's a scheduled meeting. It's either a scheduled 30-minute phone call to answer their question, or we schedule a follow-up meeting if it's too complicated and we fit it in around those surge meetings. Your niche actually seems somewhat broad to me. Retirees, simplify. What does your marketing look like? Who on your team does what for marketing? Feel free to hate me. We do zero marketing whatsoever. It is 100% through client referrals. I already have too many clients to begin with. So part of the reason why I don't do anything marketing is capacity. Basically, at this point, I am blessed and fortunate, and I was not there my whole career, but where my clients are asking if it's okay to refer someone to me because they don't know if they'll meet the client minimum. But literally, they're asking permission to make a referral. Wasn't always there. Got there by doing this level of service consistently where, what's the saying? Seth Godin likes to talk about like what it means to be remarkable, worth remarking upon. We want to be remarkable. We want to be so good that our clients are asking permission to make referrals. We weren't there. I wasn't always there. I just kept working slowly. And I also get referrals from tax professionals periodically. Again, that was a slow burn to get to the point where we get those referrals. But if you start doing tax planning, if you write phenomenal notes, if you are a great communicator with tax professionals, eventually they realize this person isn't awful. They're not trying to sell stuff. They're actually really thorough. I can come back to our tax letters that we send to our clients using Holista Plan, which was a big part of this. We also get referrals from some tax professionals, partially because we really engage with their tax professionals to make sure that we get the planning right. That's a big part of it. We don't get a lot of referrals from them, but we do get some. Adam, I'm going to look at notes while you address whatever you're thinking of.
Nope. The only thing that I was thinking of as, and apologize that I've been kind of bouncing around multiple things in this presentation as well. Did you talk about Aaron's question about how do you divide meeting prep between staff and you? You mentioned 30 minutes of prep that you complete on Mondays.
I definitely missed that question. So once a meeting gets scheduled, every person has their jobs. Michelle is the person that compiles the agenda and gets it out in the mail with any supporting documents. She also is the person that puts the Red Tail activity into Red Tail. When she does that, she includes John and Stephanie on that, so they know that a meeting has been scheduled. John basically gets an email from Red Tail that a activity has been assigned to him. He knows to go out and make sure Nitrogen is up to date in case we brought in any accounts or closed any accounts, that the asset map is up to date, that our income dashboard and income guardrails reports are up to date, which I can share that because that's not a tool. That's a homegrown thing that we use, rip off and deployed from other people, right? So we didn't build it from scratch. We stole it from other people. My job is, and then Stephanie also is adding any performance reports to the Red Tail activity. Those are just for me to review. Those are not provided to the clients. I just want to make sure that there's no issues. And then my job is to sit down on Monday and review all that information plus those other checklist items that are in there. Can you walk through your ideal agenda meeting flow with a 1-hour meeting with a client? What are you covering? Yeah, I'd be happy to. Let me find a client and just show you the last meeting agenda. Let me go here. I think, can you guys confirm that I'll have the ability to share my screen? Is that turned on?
Yep, let me stop sharing here.
Okay.
And while Brian's pulling that up, I think the thing that I would not really clarify, but just add on to with what Brian said about the delineation between what's done behind the scenes versus what's done by Brian. We think of this as, all right, what is the aggregation of data versus the assembly of that data, right? His team behind the scenes is aggregating the data from the client providing information, client providing their tax return, et cetera, aggregating it from their internal systems. Brian is the assembler of that data, right? Correct me if I'm wrong on this, Brian. You're the one that's looking at all of this and then doing the actual knowledge work of an advisor in saying, based off of these pieces of the puzzle, do we need to add any additional pieces of the puzzle? Do we need to take any away? Do we need to replace them? What are the top of mind conversations for clients? Like, you're the one assembling this data both in your mind as well as in the agenda that you're going to present to the client.
Yep.
And then it's the reverse process when you're done with the client meeting. You're now disassembling that and doing the follow-up email of saying who's going to do what, when it's going to get done, and for which client in that email.
Yep, exactly. Okay, so here is a recent meeting agenda that was sent out to clients. Again, unbelievably simple. Here's the quote-unquote formula that we use for every agenda. We always start with what's on your mind. Remember, my clients are retired or near retirement. So I always ask if there's any major expenses planned in the next 12 months that we need to think through from a cash flow standpoint. We review and update their asset map report. We do a portfolio review using Riskalyze/Nitrogen, in case you guys are still like me calling it Riskalyze. We go through an income review because cash flow in retirement is king. And so we want to make sure they understand what they can safely spend. And then the last bullet point or two will be whatever the value add is for that specific round of reviews. That could be beneficiary updates. That could be Roth IRA conversions. It just so happens we have had a significant number of clients in the last year or so asking us to share information with third parties, in particular with their tax professional. Hey, I'm missing my Schwab 1099. Can you send it to them? The way we handle it, we will not share that with verbal permission. We will only do it with written permission. So for every client, we've been discussing getting an information sharing agreement on file to include things like their tax professional, their attorney, and any family members they would want us to be able to talk with. So that just happens to be the most recent one. Again, could be Roth IRAs, could be beneficiary reviews, could be going through Holistic Plan and explaining why we get your taxes every single year. We recirculate that bottom one through differently every time. This gets mailed to the clients in advance of the meeting. I would say about 80% of my clients bring this to the meeting with them physically.
Brian, how are you? And I think this is in line with Christy. Christy, sorry if I'm taking your thunder here. Feel free to unmute and discuss as well. So you send this to them. How is your, and you, because you mail this to the client. This isn't an email that they get and then they respond directly to the email. So you're mailing this to the client along with the asset map and information sharing agreement if needed. How are they getting anything back to you, most specifically the answer to the first bullet point, what's on your mind?
We discussed it in the meeting. I would love to be better about proactively getting that from clients. Where we've seen it the most is clients that schedule using schedule once. There's a place in there that says, what do you want to talk about in the meeting? And Some clients will put that in there. I think it's one of the things on my list for improving is seeing if there's an easy way for us to collect the answer to that. But I'll be honest with you, sometimes clients just need to sit in that meeting and talk it through out loud. They don't always come in prepared with an answer to that question, but they do often come up with questions during the meeting. And if you see me looking off the side, I'm just getting my chat window reopened so I don't miss anything.
No worries. Now, I think that, and to your point, you kind of hit on what I was wondering is how are you then, if the client is what's on your mind and the question would be thinking about purchasing a vacation rental, how much can we afford? Mm-hmm. That is something that you would ideally, I'm assuming, like to have a little bit of time to prep for beforehand, or maybe you know the client well enough that if they bring that in the moment, in the moment of the client meeting, you talk it through with them in the meeting and you strategize in the meeting. I can see it both ways.
We start to talk it through in the meeting, but it's going to be something that's going to require a follow-up. So that'll be in the meeting notes, right? Like in the tasks that we're going to help with. One of the ways that we would help a client answer that question, this is, you guys can still see my screen, right? The income dashboard. Yep. Okay. So two tools that we use with every client. Again, remember what I do for clients, help you simplify your money, help you create an income plan you can't outlive, help you minimize your taxes over your lifetime. I would love to make this look prettier. I found I don't need to. It's simple and clients understand it. For every one of our clients, we create an income dashboard. It's a one-page summary of where all their income is. We break it down into three categories. Green is certain. Income you don't have to worry about. It's going to be there like clockwork every month, typically going to be Social Security and pension. Yellow, or a little tan beigeous, is protected income. That's income that has some sort of a contractual guarantee or floor that it can't drop below. Think an annuity with a guaranteed minimum withdrawal benefit or a fixed annuity contract with, you know, a SPIA, something like that. And then variable income. And that for most of my clients is the $1 million question. How much can I safely spend from my accounts without running out of money? Or if I'm trying to soften the conversation with clients, how do we make sure that you don't wear out the piggy bank before you wear out? Ian, you can laugh all you want. You can think it's hokey. Clients get that. They understand it. Even my clients with millions of dollars get that. We give them this summary, which helps them understand their spending capacity as of today. This is how much money you can actually spend from these sources. Now, fair question from the group, if there's quizzical looks out there, is how do you figure out the variable income component? How do you calculate how much people can safely spend? We use an income guardrail. This is stolen from Matt Jarvis's, which was stolen from Guyton and Klinger.
Guyton, yep.
Yep. Slightly different, though, in that I also took studies from Vanguard and from another guy, I think his name was David Zopp. They had the exact same, they did the exact same math on sustainable withdrawal rates using adjustable income over time. In other words, adjusting based on performance, et cetera. We took those three studies, combined them all together, and took the most conservative outcomes from all three studies to get the output for this report. And the only reason we did that was Guyton and Klinger was kind of limited in terms of the asset allocation that they used or the number of years that they did the income over. It was generally like a 65% stock portfolio and generally over 30 years. The Vanguard and the Zot studies expanded out wider than that. They did different asset allocations in different time periods. So we wanted to be able to have a more inclusive tool. But back to your question about, and this goes to the Monte Carlo analysis, and this goes to the, you know, the financial planning. What I always tell clients is all that matters is how much your accounts will actually support. Doesn't matter what the projections say. Doesn't matter what the market might be worth in 5 years. As of today, here's how much income you can generate. And we use the income dashboard report. So the I'll show you the inputs here on a separate page. I'll zoom in a little bit because I know this is small for the group. Not that much. We would like to track starting balances versus current balances to make sure we understand if it's still within the guardrails. I'll go back to the original report and show you why we do that. Years of desired income, asset mix, safe withdrawal rate. If you guys want to debate 5.4% as a safe withdrawal rate, love to do that. Save that for after 1:30. I don't think everyone on the call wants to have
what
that.
What was the withdrawal rate?
5.4% for 30 years.
Okay.
We can debate that, have that conversation. Current balances. And then when I show clients this report, and again, even my engineer, even my people who love all the details, I use the same line every time and it resonates 100% of the time. We keep this report grade school simple. Green is good, red is bad.
How do you get the data into the spreadsheet?
John from my office is responsible for pulling this from the different sources. It's not automated, hence John needing to prep for the meetings. We go and we pull the numbers from Schwab or from LPL or from wherever we're pulling them from.
My ears just started bleeding a little bit, but thankfully it's someone else doing that. So
it's way easier than you think, because here's why it's easier. If you go to their asset map report and we update their asset map report, all the numbers are right there in the asset map report. It takes all of about 5 minutes to update this report whenever we prep for it. I have looked at Income Lab. It is awesome. I have thought about it, but I don't want to break what's working yet, Ian. So yeah,
if it's not broken, fix it.
It's on my list, but I'll tell you, this works so well with clients and it's so easy to use. I haven't seen a reason to pay a subscription for something that we can update in 5 minutes per meeting, 15 minutes per year, and clients love it. And it's
because Income Lab, it's not like there's a data feed from that. You still have to do the manual entry into data into Income
He's
Lab,
saying correct? The asset map can pull in the information directly. Again, it's less than 5 minutes for us to prepare this. It's super simple. Haven't used Bucket Bliss. So this is what we use to calculate the client's income, how much they can safely spend from their accounts. And then what we do in prepping for each meeting is we have two tests that we want to make sure this passes. First, are the accounts still between the guardrail balances? And second, this person happens to have zero. We actually pull the withdrawals they've taken for their accounts in the previous 12 months. And again, this report, it's all built grade school simple. If it's green, it's good. If it's red, it's bad. If this person's, you know, had dropped down below the lower guardrail, this will turn red. And if they've spent more than they could safely spend in the last 12 months, this will turn red. And if a client asks me how much money can I afford to spend on the trip, on the et cetera, well, here's what your current spending rate has been. Here's what your safe withdrawal rate is. Here's the gap. And the beauty of this tool is that it can answer how much can I safely spend. It can also answer the question of how much is left to spend. And for those clients that have more money than they're ever going to spend, it can answer the question of how much can I give away. I have been surprised how many different ways we've used this tool. It also, because it's such a simple tool, can very quickly, how do we get track how much they've actually spent? We go and we just run a report from Schwab of withdrawals from their accounts over the previous 12 months. It's just a simple report. Show us all withdrawals from their accounts in the previous 12 months. And we put it in the box.
Brian, can you scroll down to the second page? Is there a tax rate input?
Yep.
Ah, there it is. Okay. I saw that on the upper right-hand corner or upper left-hand corner, it was pre-tax and after-tax. And I'm like, right, surely you're grabbing this somewhere or there's a tax rate being used somewhere. Okay.
Yep. Cool. Yep. Thanks. So admittedly, like I know that there is no non-retirement 10% rate, but some of the money's coming out tax-free. Some of the money's coming out. Yeah. So we blend it to say 10%. And then this one's just a standard where it's at 25%. Once we pulled their account, pulled them into Holista plan and we're reviewing their tax returns annually, we'll use their marginal tax rate in the tax withholding assumption.
Why marginal and not effective?
Because I want to be extra conservative because not all of my clients have taxes withheld from their Social Security. And I don't want to get caught in a situation where they owe taxes.
Okay. Good tip. A good point. Yep.
That's just, again, my clients got burned a few times where we used effective.
Yeah.
And then found out that, again, my fault, like should have known that they weren't having taxes withheld from their Social Security. And in those situations, our withdrawals effectively were marginal income to them. So should have been withheld at the marginal rate. Do what works for you.
Yeah. Well, but I think it's a good point. I appreciate you clarifying that because, and I think anybody that's worked with retirees in the past knows that, right, every retiree looks at their portfolio different and looks at their money different when they go from accumulation to decumulation. And one area that can especially sting is having a client having to pay even $500. Like if they have a bill come due at tax time, that's not, my experience has been, that's not something I would rather have them get a $2,000 refund than have to write a $250 check.
Yep. My experience is we have that conversation with our clients. So when we're setting up withholding on accounts, a question I specifically ask is, how do you feel about your taxes each April? I've got one client, I've explained it 1,000 times why it's a bad idea, who wants to get back a large refund. It's how she's always done it. It's the way she wants it. So we target this like $4,000 or $5,000 refund every year. I've talked till I'm blue in the face about how it's a free loan to the government and there's no reason to do it, blah, 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 blah. It's one out of 400 or 375 clients, 350 clients, fine. To your point, Adam, our default is to get our clients a small refund. That's our default goal. Because to your point—
We target 1,500. Do you have a number that you look at, Brian?
We've stuck the landing if we're anywhere around $1,000.
Okay, yeah.
And that's cutting it close, especially now with interest rates jumping so much. They don't always think through just how much more interest they've earned on their high yield savings accounts. We've been really pushing high yield savings accounts for accounts held away. And they haven't been thinking through like, oh, my 100 grand that was making 0.1% is now making 4.75%. I should probably bake in an extra $4,000 worth of taxable income this year. They haven't been doing that. So it's been harder to hit that number recently. Is the Excel available for sharing? Yes, I'm happy to share the Excel file.
Ooh, look at that. That is value right there. Thanks, Brian.
Yep. Yeah, this is version 7 of this document. So it's actually called Income Dashboard 7.0. We've changed it that many times.
So I want to go back up, scroll up a little bit. Christy's feeling feisty today. If I've been a client of yours 6 years, I am getting the same mail in the mail every 6 months with the same agenda, except the last bullet point is different.
Pretty much. And clients love it. You would think that they would say, what am I paying you for? And instead, what they understand is that the value is in the conversation we have in the meeting. And the more clients have gotten the agenda, the better the relationship has become. Because they understand what's expected in the meeting and they're coming to the meeting prepared to spend more time talking about what's on their mind or what planning they need.
Christy, for what it's worth, we're the same way. I mean, even for our practice centers, they get the same agenda.
Yeah, no, I can see how you would interpret it as
I take it as passive aggressive. Like I take it the other way, Christy. I was worried like, client wants to pay me $10,000 a year to get the same agenda twice? And the answer is 100% yes.
Yeah, no, I'm just surprised I'm surprised that you're okay kind of, you know, if you won't take a phone call live, that clients that they're not telling you in advance of the meeting what's top of mind, that you're having to think on your feet as to...
It's not that I don't want to take the call. I love having to think on my feet. I don't take the phone call live because it's a disruption to our workflow during the day.
Yeah.
It's not because I can't be prepared. It's because not taking it live does two things. It gives my staff an opportunity to address the question first before it even gets to my desk. If it's something simple like, oh, I needed to just update my beneficiaries, or we need to increase our income a little bit, right? And my staff knows when to come to me for those things and when not to, and to not interrupt my workflow, right? Like if I'm sitting there on a Monday, I don't want to be stopping every 15 minutes to answer a phone call. I want to know that I've got time in the afternoon to get that done.
Yeah, no. And what I was saying was that it just feels like it's in contrast to the asking the client in the agenda what's on your mind. And the first time that you'll be hearing about that is when they're sitting in the meeting with mm-hmm. you. And like, so one thing we try to prevent, we call it the tail of the meeting, like having a bunch of follow up. I'd rather mm-hmm. do a bunch of work in advance of the meeting to yeah. handle it there instead of having this big fat tail after the meeting with something that they brought up. And I'm like, if I would have known about this in advance, we could have had this conversation now.
So I could have had the beneficiary change ready or the account yeah. application change
yeah, I'm
ready
just brainstorming with you as to like how, you know, for the next, like just trying to think about that, because this was actually the part of a question I put on Tribe of this whole, just the efficiency of meetings with clients. So and obviously you're obsessed with efficiency. Feel like we're kindred.
100%.
So I'm like, how do you?
I literally keep a timer on my desk to see how long things take. Yes, I have that one too. I have both of them. So when I was saying before, like, so okay, I'll expose my inner nerd here. When I was saying before, it takes how long it takes to me to prepare for meetings. It's a smidgen over 22 minutes per meeting. That's like. It's like 22 minutes yeah. and 17 seconds is my current average. Like I'm a dork when it comes to stuff, but because I need to know, is 30 minutes enough time on a Monday to actually prepare for a meeting? Can I actually get all, it takes me on average about 17 minutes to write up my client meeting notes after a meeting. Cause I'm a dork and I measure these things and I keep track of these things. You don't have to be that nerdy to do this. But I had to. I think, Christy, it's a great point to avoid that long tail. I think that we haven't run into that. So I haven't adjusted my process, but I promise you, if we were running into that every meeting, I would change the process to avoid the long tail. I think clients love knowing what to expect, 100%. So remember, I took over for two retiring advisors whose clients were not going through this process. In the beginning of the change, we had clients who were constantly calling in with questions. I literally have clients now who will say, "What's on your mind?" Well, you know, we saved these questions because we knew our review meeting was scheduled for today. So you all of a sudden, the interruptions and the one-off questions start to slowly go down over time. Clients also know that if it's going to be 5 more months until the next meeting and they've got something pressing, they need to call the office. They need to ask that question. I end every meeting the same way, which is if there's anything you need between meetings, don't hesitate to reach out. We're here to help. Every meeting ends with that line as a reminder, like, this isn't great. Happy to talk with you. Don't call my office for 6 months. It's the exact opposite. It's just call us anytime you need anything.
I think it's also indicative of yet another reason why working with retirees is freaking awesome. Their life doesn't change that much relative to, I mean, do people buy second homes and do this and do that? Yes. But it's a fraction of what, Christy, I think your clients experience, certainly in our firm, what our clients experience. Anybody that basically worked with someone other than retirees, it's not the only thing that's constant in their life is change. And so the ability for us to be prepared ahead of time amplifies the effect of reducing that tail. Maybe I said that, you know, or maybe said differently, if we don't plan ahead, the size of that tail gets amplified. For Brian's clients, because a lot of them are in lather, rinse, repeat mode. And for the handful that do have a change coming that they bring in to discuss, it's not so complicated that they can't discuss that in live time during the meeting. And then the handful of items that might need to get done, is there a little bit of a tail? Yeah. Is it enough to move the needle to try and reinvent the entire process? Probably not.
Yeah, I won't lie. Got a little lucky with the niche that I happen to enjoy working with. Like they're easy to schedule with. Their concerns are typically the same. And by the way, I jokingly say tongue in cheek, I got lucky. I thought this through too, right? I realized I had 300 plus clients that I had to serve. I started to look at the common traits among them. Most of them were already people within 5 years of retirement or retired. So then we started looking at, of those people that we work with, what are the most common questions or concerns that we have that those clients always have, right? And your retirees, it's pretty simple. Can I afford to retire? Can I make sure I don't run out of money before I die? Can I do all the things in my life that I want to do that like sound fun? Or can I get through my bucket list? Can I make sure I give the government the least amount of money in taxes? Turns out you're not more patriotic if you pay more money in taxes. It's okay to try to minimize that number. And then for a lot of them, it's just the peace of mind of, there's a million moving pieces here. We look at the, like I look at these retiree numbers every single day, 8 hours a day, nonstop. Most clients doing it right are only going to retire once. They don't have the ability to try things out and see how it worked. They want someone to sit down and answer the questions. Am I going to be okay? How much can I afford to spend? When can I afford to retire? How do I minimize my taxes? And we'll do more complicated stuff with them. But it doesn't have to be like for my group of clients, we have really simplified things. We can have a separate meeting on picking a niche. Just pick retirees. That would be my presentation.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, I forgot what I was going to say.
My apologies, I interrupted you.
No, it wasn't that big of a deal. It wasn't that big of a deal.
What else do people want to know? I'll answer.
Yeah, we have just to kind of coming up against the bottom of the hour here. We've got about 6 minutes remaining. So again, any questions for Brian, please feel free to share. Brian, can you share the agenda? And sure. Did I miss the Excel? Allison, I'm not sure how you want to handle a couple of the follow-up deliverables, if we want to create a thread in Tribe or if this will be attached to the lesson once in post-production and the collateral, the resources will be shared in the lesson.
Yeah, we can put it on the lesson, which will be on the member site probably by Wednesday. And I did drop, Brian had in advance sent me a lot of samples. So we made a packet and that is in the chat. But the income dashboard, Brian can send that to me after this and we'll have it on the website by Wednesday.
Maybe what we could do instead, Allison, because it requires a little bit of explanation. Can I maybe do a post at some point with a video explanation of how to do the data input and then you can link to that?
Yeah, let's do that on Tribe then. If you want to be able to explain it, we'll just create a post there.
Because there's some hidden fields that you type into to make it easy. And no, it won't be easy to figure out without it.
Yeah, Brian. So then if you want to create a post in Tribe, do a Loom video or what I'm saying, or not Loom, what do you Vidyard. Use? What'd you say? Yeah. Vidyard. Do a Vidyard on it and then just attach the Excel file, tag Allison in that post so that she gets notified so she can go grab that and pin it, archive it, do whatever she does behind the scenes to make it special.
Yeah, I'll do that. I promised earlier just to show an actual set of meeting notes. Is my screen still shared? Oh, can you guys all see it?
No, it's not. Go ahead. And
okay, let me reshare, Brian. Share screen. I just promised I'd show an actual real world one that was larger and easier to read. This is just the copy that we threw into Redtail after the fact. You guys can see this now in Redtail?
Yep.
And again, I just picked a simple one, just a recent one, but meeting notes are all done the same way. So client's name, great senior today. She had some family in town to visit. What we need the client's help with first, what our office will do second, with my staff's name listed. So they know what they're supposed to do. They get BCC'd on this message. And then written notes from the meeting. I picked a really simple one. This is not one that I would send to an engineer. This is one I would send to a delegator.
Okay, let me ask a clarifying operational/SOP question. Scroll up. Bullet point number one, items our office will address. We will withdraw $2,855 per month before taxes. How do you communicate to your team which account? How much is the tax rate? Are there state and local tax withholdings? What day of the month is it going out? What bank account is it going to? Like all of these additional details that need to get answered that you likely know in your head that your team needs to know. How do you communicate that to your team?
In this situation,
just for that one example, right? I listed off five additional pieces of details.
Yeah, great question. In this example, client already had MoneyLink on file. Tax withholding was already established in the system. So it was traditional IRA. It was in the beginning of July and it was before taxes and it was the bank account on file. However, if any of those things are in question to my staff, I literally put it in the notes. I'll type it in a little more narratively. Oh yeah.
Okay.
No, I would say like Michelle from my office will process a distribution from your traditional IRA. She'll withhold 15% for federal taxes, 5% for state taxes. We'll direct deposit it. If there's only one account, we'll direct deposit it to the bank account on file. But I will type that into the notes. That's where I said before, and this is such, I'm so glad you asked the question, learning how to write the notes to the client in a way where my staff doesn't have to ask me a follow-up question. I know what needs to be included. And so it will go right in the meeting notes when I do that. If it's tax withholding, if there's a different date, et cetera, I will write it as though I was writing the note to my staff. So there's no questions.
Awesome.
Great question. I picked a bad example because many of those
things are
already established for this client.
Well, but the point is, I mean, even though, yes, it was already established for that client, I asked a question. So you clarified how you would do that if it was a client where, hey, they're recently retired. They've never done distribution. We don't know what day of the month it's coming out of. They might have MoneyLink on file, but they have two different bank accounts on file, which we have a number of clients that have that situation in place. So
exactly.
Just wondering operationally how you solve for that.
Yeah. We'll deposit this to your Wells Fargo account on August 5th with 15%. I'll type it out or dictate it out, one or the other.
Okay. Let's see, one more question. And in the Q&A, spoiler alert, anonymous that's asking this, you're likely overthinking it. Your clients care about you. They care about your success. They know that team members come and go, especially if you're working with business owners. They know all too well what it's like to have team members come and go. So they will likely be empathetic in this. The question is, how do you all inform clients about a staff member that you've let go in a respectful way and that doesn't make clients worried about your ability to continue to serve them? I've unfortunately had that experience, I think, 3 or 4 times. It's something basically along the lines of, client, I just want to let you know that as of blank date, Johnny is no longer a member of the team here at Integrated Planning and Wealth Management. Rest assured, we are making sure that all of the continued service expectations that you have of our team are being filled by the remaining team members, and we'll keep you posted if there are or when we fill that seat with a new team member. Again, wordsmith that off the cuff. Brian, anything that you would add differently to that?
I think a lot of times, to your point about overthinking it, it's an issue to the clients if you make it an issue.
Correct.
If it's a non-issue to you, it's a non-issue to them. That's been my general feeling on these things. So
very well said.
I'm going to make sure I address. But if you keep it low key, they'll keep it low key. Most clients will reflect back to you the level of concern you've expressed to them.
100%.
That's been my experience. Ian had a question. I'll try to answer it quickly because I know that this call needs to end. But what do you do about time-consuming questions like I'm worried about how much we have in bonds, blah, all those types of things? Couple of answers. First. I'm a fast typer, so I don't mind writing email responses if I have the time to do it. Second, if it's really going to be long, I'll actually just record a video on Vidyard and just record the video and send it back to them. Or third, I'll respond with, hey, that's a great question, and I think it's best served with a phone call. My office is going to reach out to you and schedule 30 minutes for us to have a conversation. Because when all is said and done, you probably will spend more than 30 minutes writing and formatting and changing your email so it's more efficient. So it's one, if I think I can, I'll bang out the email. Two, I'll record a video on Vidyard and send it out to them with my video answer. And then three, I'll schedule a 30-minute phone call with the client so that I don't spend as much time on it and so that it's a fixed amount of time. And I get those. I get the big complicated questions. Again, I think the other thing is coaching your clients. I'm worried about how much we have in bonds with what's going on with the Fed right now. I got to back up the bus a little bit to understand how I would avoid that question altogether. Stolen from other advisors. Our conversation, remember, retirees with income. Our investment philosophy is built around creating an income plan you can't outlive. One of the ways we do that is to make sure you're going to be able to take uninterrupted withdrawals from your investment accounts. Here's how we handle that in our office. And Allison, if you need me to just quit because I'm over time, tell me to. But here's how we handle it in our office. We want our clients to typically have between 60 and 70% of their money invested in stocks, because historically stocks are the only investment category that have consistently outpaced inflation over time. But we understand that stocks won't always cooperate. They will go down and they will stay down in value for extended periods of time. So the way we support that is we make sure we have 1 to 2 years worth of planned withdrawals in cash or cash equivalents, money that's not in the market. And we specifically pick that period of time because the average bear market in stocks has lasted 18 months. go back to the Great Depression, the Great Recession, and everything in between, and include COVID, the average bear market in stocks is 18 months. If we have 1 to 2 years in cash or cash equivalents, you can take uninterrupted withdrawals from your accounts without having to sell a single stock in a bear market. However, that's an average. Sometimes they last longer. And historically, the longest a bear market has lasted is just a smidgen over 4 years. Same, go back 100 years, Great Depression, Great Recession, everything in between. Historically, you've seen a full recovery from stocks within a 4 year period of time. In addition to your cash, we will have between 2 and 3 years worth of planned withdrawals in bonds and bond funds. That way, if we run out of cash and the bear market is not corrected in stocks, we still have a place to take uninterrupted withdrawals without being forced to sell stocks during a bear market. And we will always make sure we maintain a 4 to 5 year shock absorber of cash and bonds to prevent you from selling stocks at the worst possible time. And that is my answer to pretty much 99.9% of our clients' questions about why do you invest the way you do. And I know that's
the thing that I would add on top of that would. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Brian.
I was just going to say, like, I know people have, you know, taxes are a matter of fact, investments are a matter of opinion. So I know people have different opinions on that, and I respect that. I'm just going based on history and what's worked for our office and our clients.
So with that being said, one last final point on that topic, regardless of what your philosophy is, A, every advisor on here should have an investment philosophy, investment plan A, you should not have a plan B, right? What I mean by that is your clients cannot dictate your investment philosophy. So you have a plan A, we don't have a plan B. If you're looking for a plan B, we're not the firm for you. Having said that, it is important, especially for retirees, to reaffirm that, dare I say, every single client meeting. When you're, and I'm assuming, Brian, that you do this when you go over the guardrails or you go over your spreadsheet. As a reminder, here's our investment philosophy. I saw you have it in the upper right-hand corner. This is how much we keep of your portfolio. The reason we do this is because, remember how I told you, blah, 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 blah. I've had retirees that have said, I used to worry about this stuff. You keep reminding me about what you have in place. Now I don't worry about it anymore. This stuff matters. So even though you as an advisor may feel like you're being redundant in your thought process and in what you're communicating to your clients, they need to hear it.
It's part one. So on the agenda, where there's the talk about the Riskalyze and risk number review, nitrogen review, that's where we have the conversation. I review three. This is probably going to time out. Let me see if it's timed out or not. Because I was talking so long. I review three. Allison, are we okay for me to handle this?
Yeah. Why don't you wrap up maybe no later than 5 minutes, but that's totally fine.
You got it. And I'll happy to catch up with people offline if they want to discuss this more. I picked a random one here. This one's a bad example because this person has, let's go to Kaufman. Because this person has too much in stocks compared to an average client of ours. That was his choice. And I know I'm sharing stuff, but if you guys know this person, congratulations. There's 300 million people in the United States. The odds of you knowing this one person are slim to none. Here's my conversation with clients about investments. And you can hate how simple this is. Honestly, it used to be way more complicated and I continue to simplify it because clients wanted it to be more simplified. Three numbers that we review every meeting when we talk about your investments. The first is your risk target up here next to your name. This is historically how much risk you felt. I'm going to sound like a robot to do this fast. This is historically how much risk you felt comfortable taking in your portfolio. Second is your actual risk number updated daily by this tool, which is currently 54. We are very comfortable having your risk number move up to 5 points above or below your risk target without feeling like we have to make an adjustment and bring your risk back in line. Short version of this, your risk target and your risk score are aligned today. Here's to Adam's point about the conversation about investments. Mr. and Mrs. Kleiner, in this case, Joan, if you'll recall, we always want to make sure we've got at least 60% of your money invested in stocks to make sure we keep up with inflation, the rest divided between bonds and cash. You can see from your current asset allocation, we're right on the money with your stocks. We're holding a little more in cash. This is intentional for this client. She's got some major expenses coming up in the next 12 months. We wanted to make sure we had more cash on hand. It's all in the Schwab government money market account earning 5%. So the client doesn't really care. She's still doing fine with that money. But this is where we have the conversation around, do we have the right amount in stocks and do we have a five-year shock absorber of cash and bonds so you don't have to worry about the market? And if the market takes a big dive, this is where we have the conversation of, here's how many years of uninterrupted income you can take from your accounts without being forced to sell a single stock investment during this down market. I do not talk about asset allocation of stocks and bonds when the market is bad. I talk about the number of years they can take uninterrupted withdrawals without being forced to sell a stock in the down market. It is the same conversation, just done in a way that a client can understand. And then the third and final number I look at with my clients is their risk-alized GPA. It's a measure of portfolio health. Effectively, you want this number to stay over 3.5. Anything over 3.5 means you're getting a good rate of return compared to the amount of risk in your portfolio. For those of you that don't use nitrogen, the risk score is just going to tell you how volatile you can expect your portfolio to be. It's not going to tell you if you have a good portfolio. The GPA is designed to say, for the level of risk you're taking, plus there's additional factors, have you historically earned a healthy rate of return? If this number drops below any thresholds we're comfortable with, we start making changes to the investments in the portfolio. Rare, but it happens. That is my investment conversation with clients every time we meet. If they have follow-up questions, I will drill down into the details. They rarely have follow-up questions. And if they ask about the Fed and bonds, et cetera, right now, my answer is, again, the same answer. There's no plan B. We have currently positioned our portfolios for a flat to rising interest rate environment. And I did say that correctly, not decreasing. Not because we think rates are going to go up, but because unlike stock market moves, the Fed actually announces when interest rates change. That is a party I am more than happy to be 15 minutes late to. Once we have clear direction from the Fed that interest rates are now in the flat to declining phase, we will make adjustments to the bond side of your portfolio. But a lot of very smart people changed a lot of portfolios for a decreasing interest rate environment in January of this year. They were very early to the party and they were wrong for the first 6 months. That's a party I'm happy to be late to. You are welcome to have a different investment philosophy. Investments are a matter of opinion. That's how we've handled it. Not a single client's had any concerns.
Awesome. Brian?
That was 4 minutes, Allison. You gave me five. I did it four.
Thank you.
Great information. Thank you so much for just being transparent and pulling back the curtain to see how the wizard does everything here. So very, very much appreciative. Appreciate everybody's engagement in the conversation here as well. As we mentioned, by Wednesday, I'm not going to hold Brian to a timeline as far as when he can have guardrails. I will let him control that narrative and when he posts on Tribe. Brian, if you can, I think, Allison, correct me if I'm wrong, it would probably be best to just post it under the general chat. Don't worry about nesting it. Just tag Allison when you do that post with your video and the guardrails template. Again, so grateful and appreciative of you being willing to share that. I know that is a decent amount of intellectual property and time that you and your team have put into that. So thank you for your generosity and transparency there. Allison, anything else? I'll kind of let you wrap up the call, but thank you everybody for being here.
No, just super happy to have you spend this time with us, Brian, and Adam lead the call. Resources coming to you all, and please remember to register for our events. Yep. Summit and in person. Be sure to register. If you're only attending Summit virtually, still need to register. So don't forget that component. So thank you everyone for spending today with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for the extra time, everybody. Appreciate it.
Be well. Take care, everybody.
Bye, everyone.